Our message for today: do not wish a veteran, or anyone for that matter, a happy Memorial Day, for many is not a happy day. Rather, think of this weekend as a national day of mourning. Now, don't get me wrong, each of us choose to honor the dead in our own way. Many use the occasion for a celebration of the lives of those who have passed on. However you choose to spend this holiday, remember that there are those who have sacrificed this holiday and every other day so that we could live in peace and have this day with our families. With that, I ask every listener for one favor. They say that a person never really dies until they're forgotten on that day when their name is no longer spoken. If you don't personally know a fallen warrior, find one. Their names are inscribed in stone at cemeteries all across your town or city. Find one name, repeat it, and tell that person thank you. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, on Memorial Day. Our guest today has taken that concept, the commitment of assuring that the fallen are never forgotten, to an entirely different level. Michael Reagan is an internationally renowned artist and has done portraits of many famous people, movie stars, rock stars, sports stars. In his words, he's even achieved the trifecta of portrait perfection, the three P's: presidents, playmates, and even the Pope. Michael, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
How are you?
How do you answer that question on a weekend like this, Michael?
You're able to remember.
I'm alive and able to remember. That's okay. That's a good point. So glad to have you here. As I mentioned, this is one of the toughest shows that I do, and I saw your piece or a piece about you on Havoc Journal. I thought, wow, let's get this guy on American Warrior Radio. So let's forge on ahead, if you don't mind, sir. Let's start with how a football injury made you discover a very, very special talent that you have.
Well, I was one of those guys who liked to play sandlot football, and, you know, we would beat each other up, a bunch of us in the neighborhood, and I knocked down this gentleman who was about twice my size, and he wasn't happy about it, and so he knocked me back down after he stood up and broke my arm. So I would spend my Saturdays for a while in a cast in my house, and I was listening to a University of Washington football game on the radio, and there was a magazine in front of me with Katharine Hepburn's picture on it, and I picked up a piece of paper just because I wanted to do something, and I drew her portrait, and By the way, eventually I ended up drawing her portrait for her, which she loved. Hmm. But I, you know, I clicked into something there that I really enjoyed, and I've been drawing portraits ever since.
Now, Michael, when the time came for Vietnam, you felt it was your duty to serve, so you volunteered, but you wanted to serve with the best. So remind me which branch you joined.
The United States Marine Corps.
Hoorah, there you go. Or did I do that right? Hoorah, I forget it. But
so, well, those aren't the words we used back then, but that'll do good for now and on the radio.
Fair enough. So you joined the Marines, you volunteered, you went off to Vietnam. Now, Michael, when you weren't appropriating beer from the captain's tent, I understand.
Oh, you heard about that, didn't you?
Well, the interweb, it's a wonderful tool, properly used. But you are drawing your first portraits in Vietnam. You're drawing on the back of sea ration boxes. Is that?
Well, I was stationed at the DMZ in 67 and 68. In the summer of 1967, I was at a place called Con Tien, which was the furthest north fire base in South Vietnam. And so we lived in holes. There wasn't really anywhere else to be above ground because of the incoming and et cetera. But again, there was time, downtime. And I started drawing because I loved it. And the only thing I could draw on, as my lieutenant reminded me a few years ago, was on the back of sea rat boxes, because that was the only thing we actually had access to. So I used the pen or the pencil that we would usually use for mapping. And I'd do drawings of my friends, and they'd send them home. And a lot of times the only thing that went home were the drawings. Hmm. My friends didn't.
We had another Vietnam veteran, another fellow that volunteered to go to Vietnam. You might have heard of him. His name is Roger Staubach. I don't think he played for Washington, but he was in supply because he was colorblind, so that's the area they put him. I have to have you share the story about you as a supply agent for getting beer for your troops. Tell us that real quick, if you would.
Well,
first of all,
Roger Staubach actually did his portrait after he went to Dallas, so. When I was doing NFL players, so I was really proud of doing that. But yeah, it was Christmas time. We actually had an allocation of two pops and two beers a month that was giving to us, but we didn't get our beers all year. They saved it all up for around Christmas. And my guys were stationed at C2, was a place on the river up in the north, and we ran out of beer. So my I thought it'd be interesting if I went up and had a conversation with the captain. He had great cigars, and so I went up and slipped into his tent, sat down next to him on the cot, and we just chatted about anything I'd chat for. And I held the cigar in my right hand, and my left hand I was shoving beers that were next to his cot out underneath the tent to my guys and my squad. And when we got enough, they let me know, and then the captain said to me, you know, he said, if you'd asked me for those beers, I would have given them to you. You wouldn't have to have taken them. Of course, I didn't think he knew I was taking his beer.
Well, where's the fun in that?
I know, but so we had a great time, and I did get a good cigar out of it, though. The one thing he didn't know, I wasn't there to steal the beer. I was there to get the cigar. You know?
Fair enough.
It was a good time.
Well, Michael, we are very much looking forward to our chat about what you are doing. I think we'll get to that later in the show, but I just want to sort of lead in here before our first commercial break, Michael. There was a particular name that came up in Vietnam that came up later in your life. The name is Vinnie Santaniello.
Santaniello. Dirk. Yep. And his family's actually listening to your broadcast.
Wonderful. Tell me about, now, when this happened, I read a quote, Michael, you said that you were holding someone who had been severely wounded in a rocket attack, and you say, he just looked me in the face and said, Mike, I just want to go home.
We just come off the DMZ. It was about 3 weeks before I came home. It was March 28, 1968. And a lot of units had been sent out on patrol around our perimeter. My unit was given the perimeter watch. Of course, we were short, you know, men because of a lot of people being killed. And all of a sudden, we got rocketed, about to be attacked. And after the rockets came in, we had a few minutes to get to our wounded. There was two of them, Peter Armstrong, whose grave I'll visit tomorrow, and Vincent Santaniello. Peter was already gone. Vincent wasn't. So my two corpsmen, Tony Malazzo, Doc John Nunn, and I went to, you know, Vinny. I didn't want him to be alone. And the two docs worked very hard to keep him alive, and I held him so he wouldn't be alone. And he wasn't going to survive. We all knew that, even though we were all young kids, 19 and 20. We weren't going to be able to save him, hard as we worked. And he looked up at me at the last second, and he looked me right in the face. I see that face every day. And he just said, Mike, I just want to go home. And he closed his eyes and went to heaven. Wish I had been smart enough back then to be able to tell him, Vinny, you're about to go home.
Well,
he wasn't feeling any pain, by the way. His wounds were extreme. Thank God, you know, for that, I guess. But he's been a part of my life and my project ever since.
Well, and I tell you, Michael, that's something I believe in, is honoring them by repeating their names, and you've done that for him and his family. Folks, when we come back after this break, we're going to tell you more about how that incident and some others inspired Michael. He is a world-renowned artist, and he's made a personal commitment that we never forget those that are fallen. Stick around. We'll be right back with Michael Reagan.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. A very special Memorial Day show. We're joined by Michael Reagan. Michael's a world-renowned artist, and he has made a personal commitment that people never forget those that have fallen protecting our rights and our nation. Michael, you've done lots of celebrities, several who've been on this show, apparently. You've done, this number may have changed, Michael, but you've done portraits of more than 2,000 celebrities and other notable persons. Is that an accurate figure?
Well, it's actually what I did was I've done, well, way more than that. But what I do is I've done a lot of portraits of celebrities, and then I get them to autograph blank illustration boards when I'm with them. You know, Harrison Ford and Katharine Hepburn and Ingrid Bergman, people like this, Gregory Peck, stuff like that. And then what I would do is, on those boards that they signed, I'd redraw their portraits and donate them to charities around the world. So even though I've done maybe 2,500 notable celebrities, I've probably drawn them 8,000 or 9,000 times, because I've drawn many of them more than once or twice, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Harrison Ford signed 10 boards for me. And we've drawn five of those portraits, and they always, each of those pictures have sold for more than $5,000 for charity.
So how much over the years, I mean, the amount of money you've raised for charity, Michael, it's got millions of dollars?
In 2003, a local TV station contacted me about doing a piece on my celebrity portraits for charity, and they said the reason they were calling was because they had realized after looking back on it that I had raised over $10 million for charities around the country.
Wow, very, very impressive. I want to speak about a particular comment, a compliment. And, folks, visit fallenheroesproject.org. You can see letters from people that have been the beneficiaries of Michael's generosity and his talents. There's one endorsement or compliment in particular I want to mention, Michael, because I think, if I get this right, it opened the door to what you're doing now. You did a portrait for President George W. Bush, and he said you captured the sparkle in Laura's eyes perfectly, and he wanted that portrait in the office. As I understand it, you had a chance to meet him, and he had sort of a veteran-to-veteran conversation with you. Tell us about that, what came out of that.
In 2000, I was asked if I would do the portrait of the president after the Florida count, and I said I would love to. I had done some charity work for the delegation from Anchorage along with the governor of Texas, and I said I'd love to do that work. And so after, like I said, a few months before 9/11, I was given all the photographs to do the portraits of the president and first lady. Then 9/11 happened, and that, of course, closed the White House to anybody. And so about 7 months later, in February of 2002, I was asked to meet the president and the first lady on their way to Japan for the first time in Anchorage, Alaska, to present the portraits that I had done for the two of them. So when I met the president, it was in private audience with another really good friend of mine, one of my closest friends, Maynard Tapp, who just died, by the way, in September. And we got to spend some time with the president, and it was an incredible time. And he said to me, he said, you know, he said, you caught the sparkle in my wife's eyes. And he says, I want to see those eyes every day, so I'm going to hang it near me in the Oval Office. But he also said something else to me. We were standing not 2 feet away from each other, and he said, I can't give you any more information than this, but he said soon, and this was February 14th, 2002, he said soon something's going to happen where I'm going to need you as a veteran of another war to be paying attention to what you can do for the families of a new group of veterans and fallen heroes. He says, I can't be sure what it's going to be you can do, but he says, I know you'll think of it. Just remember, you know, I want you to promise me you'll do something. And so I promised him I'd be alert to that. And a couple of years, or a year later, you know, I got the opportunity to do my very first portrait of Michael Johnson, a corpsman who died in Iraq in 2003 for his wife, Charisse. And I got to keep the president, the promise I made to the president.
Well, and that call, I think she saw your work on a TV special or something, Michael, and she called up. She wanted to commission you to do a portrait, and you just, you said no. I mean, you couldn't accept payment for that.
I'm a Marine, Vietnam combat veteran, and corpsmen are the bravest people I've ever seen, and I've actually seen him in action. In fact, Doc Malazzo and Doc Nunn are both listening to this program right now, and they know I love them both. Those are my corpsmen. Michael Johnson was a corpsman. What's interesting is about a year ago, I presented some portraits at the Everett Navy Base, again, to two fallen heroes, and I ran into the woman who was organizing it all. This is just incredible. And I told her the story, and she got this look on her face, and I didn't know what the look was. And she and her husband, who were both corpsmen back in the 90s, actually went to school with Michael Johnson in corpsman school, and they didn't know he was dead.
Oh, my.
So it was, and it was just an extreme, because she just got quiet, and she said, wait a minute, Charisse Johnson, Michael Johnson, he's African-American, right? And I said, yep, and she and her husband were close friends to the two of them, and so all of a sudden, you know, all these years later, I'm talking to the best friends of the people that started my project.
Now, Michael, the portrait for Charisse Johnson, one portrait becomes two, becomes ten, becomes what now? More than 5,400 portraits you've done for Gold Star families?
Yep, 5,400 plus.
And I got to tell you,
I have 100. By the way, I have 100 sitting here right now.
I am so grateful that you're doing this. But it's, well, for someone who's got absolutely zero artistic talent, I've got to say, how how do you pay the bills? What does your wife think about this, Michael?
Well, when it all, once I heard back from Charisse, the story about Charisse calling me after she received her son's portrait actually began this, because she told me that when she opened the package and looked into her husband's eyes, he'd been dead for a year. She said she hadn't been able to sleep a full night through in a year until she saw her son, her husband's picture. And she said they talked about a lot of stuff. And she said to him, I love you. And she said, I felt him say he loved me back and that he was okay. And so she actually called me to thank me for doing the portrait and to tell me that last night was the first night in a year she'd slept all night. So I looked at my wife and I said, well, we need to do them all. I told her about the whole, it was a 20-minute call. And my wife said, how are we going to do this? And I said, well, I'm capable of doing the art. I've been doing these celebrities for 40 years, so I'm not worried about doing the art. She said, how are we paying for it? I said, we're turning that over to God, because I don't have the time to worry about that. I just need to do the work. So we're a 501c3, so anybody who donates anything to us, we're not like others. No one makes any money on my project. The only thing that gets paid are the bills. And so I can honestly tell you 99% of anything that's donated to this project goes to this project. It does not go into anybody's pocket.
Wonderful. And, folks, you can find out more. Visit fallenheroesproject.org. And, Michael, I know you, the rules are basically you do them free of charge, but it is on a first-come, first-served basis. How long does it take you to do one portrait, approximately?
Well, I was thinking about that this morning, because I thought you might ask that question. What I do with every portrait I do, I've done over 5,400 portraits, but I've actually done one, and that's the one I'm doing on right now downstairs, a young Native American from Montana. And what I do is I study the person I'm going to do. That's been, from the families, depending on the information they send me, that takes a couple of hours. And then I start my work, and I spend between 5 and 7 hours per portrait, because I'm in a conversation with the person I'm drawing. And so I'm assuming it takes between 5 and 7 hours average to do a portrait. I do them at least, well, now I'm doing a couple a day, but I've done as many as four. But then it's not first come, first serve, by the way. I just need to correct that a little bit. I just finished doing all the folks at Parkland in Florida, at the high school, that were killed. And I did all the kids at Sandy Hook. And when that happens, what ends up happening is that I work it out so that I can draw those at a time. So I put those in place. Right now we're busy putting together the dead from Santa Fe, Texas. And so it's flexible. Sometimes, I have received some calls, because suicides are a part of my project. I'm a Vietnam vet, and sadly, suicides are war deaths, as far as I'm concerned and my project's concerned. So I do suicide portraits from the war. And I just received calls from a mom who's sadly had a lot of people turn their backs on her, and she's very sad. And if I can do that portrait within the next week and get it to her, I know what the impact's going to be. And so I'm somewhat flexible. Being the artist, not being paid, I'm pretty much flexible as to how I do that. But
Michael, I tell you what, you said something. We've got to take another break here. You said something that fascinated me. You said you're in a conversation with every person that you draw. When we come back, I want to talk more about that, because you've stared into the faces of over 5,400 fallen warriors. Folks, this is Ben Buehler Garcia, your host. We'll be right back with Michael Reagan in just a few minutes. Stick around. You're not going to want to miss it. As long as your name is repeated, you are never forgotten. Listeners, this is your host, BBG. Allow me to share. Major Troy Gilbert killed in action November 27, 2006, while providing close air support for a downed Special Forces helicopter. Specialist Christopher Moon walked away from a college scholarship and probably a professional baseball career to serve our nation. He was wounded July 6, 2010, died July 13, 2010. Ralph Kid Hopper, one of the original screwball pilots. He wore his hair long and he flew in a football jersey. He was credited with 30.5 enemy kills before being killed in action while strafing a Nazi airfield on July 2, 1944. Welcome back. We're joined by Michael Reagan, a world-renowned artist and a Marine combat veteran who has made much, much more of a commitment than I ever could have dreamed of. to make sure that people never forget our fallen warriors and our Gold Star families. Michael, before we took the break, you mentioned that you're in a conversation with the people that you're drawing. You ask people to send not just a photo, but also a little bit about that person. Is there, and you know, it's interesting in looking at the letters that you receive, so many people comment on the eyes, that you captured the eyes perfectly. Is there sort of a spiritual interaction going on while you're drawing these portraits?
Well, that's what it's all about.
Okay.
I believe my friend Vinny is sitting up next to that fallen hero when I'm drawing them. But I wanted to do a real quick follow-up on something we've already talked about. In 2007, I received the Patriot of the Year Award from the American Legion in Reno. And the president, George W. Bush, 43, actually flew out for my event. I didn't know he was coming. It was a surprise. And when I met with him, I thanked him for being there. I told him it was a pleasure to see him. And he said the only reason he came was because he wanted to thank me for keeping my promise I made to him in 2002. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, frankly, Michael, on behalf of me and of all of our listeners, thank you as well for not only keeping your promise and continuing it. Did you have sort of an end date certain when you started this? And sounds like you pushed well past that, if there was.
Well, General Jacoby, he was the past commander of I Corps, Army, Fort Lewis, and when I met with him, asked me that question one time, and he said he'd seen a lot of my portraits around the country, and he said, when do you plan on not, you know, being done with this? And I said, well, I initially thought 5 years, 1,500. I said, but we're way past that. And he said, you're never going to be allowed to finish. He said, I've seen the families. He said, as long as we're losing, they're going to be calling you. And then I said to him, I said, well, then I have the answer to your question. And he said, what's that? And I said, I'll draw my last portrait the day before someone draws mine.
Wow.
Well, I wanted to answer your question because there is an answer that was a powerful day for me, and it's going to answer the question real quickly. I have a telephone next to my drawing table, and I get calls from the war. I get generals, colonels, you know, I get a call when they need a portrait. And it's been like that for many years of this project. But one day I got a phone call from a woman, and she said, I just received the portrait of my son, and she said, I want to have lunch with you tomorrow. And I said, hey, that'd be cool, not realizing that I'd done anybody locally. I said, okay. I said, she's, where do you want to meet? And I told her a restaurant, and she said, where's that? And I told her the town, and she says, where's that town? And I said, well, it's north of Seattle. And then I said, where are you coming from? And she said, Connecticut. And she said, I do have the airline ticket already. My son's brigade commander's wife's picking me up at SeaTac Airport and bringing me to you. And she said, I already have the ticket, so we need to meet. So we did that the next day, and it was shocking that she flew across the country. I have board members I can't get to drive across town once a year, and I told her that. And anybody that has a board knows some of that's true. But anyway, we're sitting for hours talking about her son in this restaurant that I go to all the time. So everybody knows who I am and what I do and who she is, Gold Star Mom. And finally, she looks at her watch, and she says, I got to go. I said, where are you going? She says, I got to fly back to Connecticut tonight. It was the first time that I realized that she had actually flown across the country just to have lunch with me. And I looked at her and I said, why would you do that? And she looked me straight in the face. And she says, when I saw my son's picture yesterday and looked into his eyes, she said, I realized the only way you could have drawn those eyes to look that real would have been if you'd have been the last person to see my son alive.
Wow.
We stood up because she had to go. And she put her arms around me and held me in a way I've never been held before, and it was a lot of tears. And then she and the brigade commander's wife left, and I sat back down and had another glass of tea because I was trying to figure out what just happened here. And then I finally realized that this woman had flown across the country because her son died in a closed coffin. He had a closed coffin funeral.
Mm-hmm.
What she had done is she'd flown across the country to say goodbye to her son, and for whatever reason, and I think it's totally spiritual, she associated me with the ability for her to say goodbye.
Michael, I got to tell you, I mean, I talk for a living, and you're shutting me down, which is probably a good thing. What I've already got one aspect of what you do wrong, so I'm smart enough to know they say Ben gets one dumb question every show, but walk us through your project. How do people who are hearing this, people who would like to have a portrait done, what are the steps they need to take?
All right. I do one free portrait of every person who's died in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan or has been killed by a terrorist act. Okay? And I can only do one free per family because obviously I would never get the project anywhere near complete.
Sure.
All they have to do is contact me at the fallenheroesproject.org website. And there's actually a Gold Star dad, Eric Hirschberg, in Washington, D.C., who actually helps me with the requests. And once the request is made, I just need good photographs. That does include suicides of those who have come home from the war, who actually served in the war and sadly didn't make it home. Make it at home, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they get me the pictures. They share with me whatever they want to share. Whatever they want to share. Everything's kept private except for those cases where, like we're talking about today, I'm allowed to say some things. And I keep their addresses private. I do their portrait. I send it to them for free. They don't have to contact me. They don't have to say thank you. They have to do anything. Just allow me to do it for them, and then I do it for them. And I think what happens is, I believe this, by the way, I believe that there's a message that's left unsent when a soldier dies in war. I don't pretend to know what it is. I'm just not that smart of a person. But when I do these portraits, I do it with such love and respect that when that picture gets home, like with Sharice Johnson's story, whatever that message is, it gets delivered. I delivered two to Keyport, the sub base, 2 days ago. And the mother came up to me after we received it, and she says, "How did you know?" And I said, "How did I know what?" And she says, "The minute you unveiled the portrait, my son looked right at me and talked to me." And I said, "I have no idea what he said. That's not my job. My job is to make sure that that vehicle is created so he can talk to you." And so I believe these messages need to get home. With Sharice's case, it allowed her to start sleeping again with others, and you've read the letters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say this easily because it's hard for me to even believe some of this, but it's like, for some reason, in their hearts, these pictures help their family member come home.
And it's interesting, Michael, when people visit your website, on the directions it specifically says to include a photo that shows his or her eyes. it's very interesting that you speak that way. Now, one of the things I find, you know, I'm a big believer in repeating names. You've probably learned that so far from being on the show with me. But I've noticed that you don't put the individual's names on your sketches.
Nope. And the reason being is this. I'm a Vietnam vet. If you go to any Vietnam veteran wall in any state, or if you see the traveling wall, there's many names. And what ends up happening in every case with the Vietnam Memorial, and I love it, by the way, I'm not criticizing it at all, but what happens is the people going to the wall are looking for a specific name, and they rub it, they look at it, they photograph it, and all those other names are kind of not looked at, really.
Hmm.
So what I do is I do these portraits, and I have 15 different posters that each have over 225 images on it that I've drawn. They're on the website, on the posters page. And what happens is when I go out and do a talk, I want the people to look into the faces of those people who died like I do every day. Because what I want them to do is this. You said it earlier in your own show before you and I started talking. I want them to look at that face and memorize that face. And then tonight when they go home, just before they close their eyes, I want them to remember that face. Don't have to know who it is. Just remember the face and just say thank you for your sacrifice for me, and then go to sleep, because that soldier, man or woman, old or young, is listening. They're listening. And it's not so much that their name is mentioned, even though I do that too. I'm speaking tomorrow with the general from my corps again, and I will be mentioning names, because I do believe what you said. If you mention a name, the person never goes away. But I want them to remember the face of that person, whether it's an old person or a young person, whether it's a woman or a man or black or white or whatever. I want them to remember, because that's where the sacrifice is really at. And the family associated with that face is where the sacrifice is actually at.
Michael, I'm a believer that things happen for a reason. I more than ever believe now that you've been granted this talent for a special and a higher purpose. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll come back one more segment with Michael Regan. He's done over 5,400 portraits free of charge for Gold Star families. Stick around. You're not going to want to miss it. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Michael, we played that song just for you. How'd you like it?
I live by those words. Always faithful. You know, that's the way it is. Ben, I was wondering, can I mention something real quick that I don't want us to miss?
Sure, absolutely.
March 25th, 2015, I was brought back to Arlington Cemetery by the Medal of Honor Society. And they presented me with what they call the Citizen Service Before Self Honors. It's called the Civilian Medal of Honor.
Mm.
And for doing these portraits. And they said I was a unanimous decision, and you're voted on by the Medal of Honor recipients themselves. At one point after the presentation, I was walking around at the Army Navy Club, and I had my hand over my medal, and I had a scotch in my hand, so I'm a like scotch guy. And I just wanted to wander around. It's because it's a heavy deal to receive this kind of an award. And one of the Medal of Honor recipients followed me out. He saw me leaving, and he asked me what I was doing. And I said, I don't deserve this medal. I said, I just draw pictures. And he started laughing. Hmm. And he looked at me, and he said, you really don't have any idea what you're doing for the families, do you? And I said, I'm just drawing pictures. And he says, you're doing so much more. He said, we're so proud to have a veteran doing what you're doing. He says that we wanted to make sure you understood that you're now part of us.
Wow. That's...
The only reason I wanted to bring that up is because I wear this when I speak. And when I was down in San Antonio at a convention, I spoke to the National Gold Star Widows last year. And at the end, I gave my big speech on Saturday night. And the one star who runs Brooks Medical Center in San Antonio came up to me, and she looked at the medal and saluted me. And I said to her, I said, gosh, don't do that. You know, I haven't been in the service a long time. I said, don't salute me. And she says, you know, if you salute me back, it'll be over quicker. But it was like, it's this piece I wear around my neck now that I really almost didn't want to accept, that has this image of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier on it. And, I'm very proud of it. So I wanted to make sure and mention that.
As you should be, sir. Absolutely. That's now... In preparing for this show, Michael, I you know, as you can tell, I did my research. I watched the videos and read some articles. You made a comment that said that anything that's done for or about fallen soldiers must be pure.
Yeah.
Expound on that thought, if you would, for us, sir.
My work isn't about politics. And I don't think politics should interfere with the way anybody feels about a soldier who dies in war. Because what we really need to realize is that they were serving because of their beliefs, not our beliefs. And I had somebody yesterday, while I was selling poppies, come up to me, a woman whose husband was in Vietnam who had passed away, and she missed him terribly. When I hugged her, she started crying, and she said, I just wish people would understand that my husband really did serve for all of us, not just for himself, as I did and as everybody that's a veteran listening to this program did. We didn't join the service because we wanted to go have fun, because none of us, even if we didn't know what we were about to walk into, didn't join for fun. And we knew that we might pay the ultimate price, which tomorrow we're going to remember for everybody that did pay that price. So it's like, if you're going to actually think about a veteran, and I hope everybody does, Memorial Day is not about mattresses. Mm-hmm. It's about veterans. Veterans who died to make everybody safer in this country. And I truly believe that.
Now, Michael, I never served, which is why I consider it my duty to support those that do, and to spread these messages, and to really do everything I can to bridge that gap of understanding. Because I'm very, very concerned that as we have fewer and fewer families bearing the burden of war, that gap is growing. And folks, you know, it's not like when you came back from Vietnam where it was, you know, to some extent malicious. This is more of sort of a sublime ignorance, but it's dangerous nonetheless. So let me, I don't know if you heard my intro, you know, when I walked into that business and it's the Happy Memorial Day, and I literally winced, and I told the young lady behind the counter, I said, look, you know, you might want to just, I'm glad that you're respecting the holiday, but take the darn word happy off there. What is your feeling, Michael, when you...
My feeling is that I gave a speech in a church where I presented a son's portrait to his mother, who was part of a church 2 weeks ago. It's quite a large church in the town I live in. And while I was presenting it, I decided to ask this question, because this is a group of people who understand who this woman is. And I said, how many in this room understand what a Gold Star mother is? Half the room didn't know. That's really incredibly disappointing if they don't understand what a Gold Star mom is or a Gold Star family member, because Gold Star family members, they paid a bigger price than anybody's paid. Okay?
Absolutely.
So the respect that you're talking about, yesterday I was out at a supermarket, like I said, giving away poppies, and I can't, many times did people come up and say, Happy Memorial Day. Mm. I miss my friend Vincent Santinello. I miss my friend Peter Armstrong and Bruce Johnston and Maynard Tapp and all my friends, these people who served. And tomorrow's not going to be a happy day. I'm visiting two graveyards to put flowers on two of my friends' graves. I'm speaking with the general tomorrow to make sure people understand some other stories that we didn't cover today, you and I, of people who didn't come home. The dad whose wife was pregnant and the baby was born after he died, who will never see his father. I mean, we're talking about two of those families tomorrow, because that's what Memorial Day is about. Again, I understand people selling stuff. I totally understand all that. It's the way it's the culture, right? Mm-hmm. But let's remember, it's Memorial Day. Memorial. Memory. Remember. And that's what I plan on doing. People, when they see me, by the way, you should understand, Ben, when anybody sees me walk in, they know what my mantra is, and that's to never forget, like you said at the beginning. They know that I'm going to tell them something that's going to make them uncomfortable. I had a guy one time call me, and he said, can you make your talk a little more upbeat? And I said, you got to be kidding. I said, I'm talking about dead people who died for me in this country and you too. I said, it can't be upbeat. If you need upbeat, don't call me. Because what I'm trying to do is talk a little bit of reality of the 1% of those people who went to war from this country, regardless of anybody. They defended everybody's position, okay, and didn't come home, and their families are living without them. And your job, my job, the listeners' jobs is to remember, never, never forget them.
Yeah, well spoken, sir. I got to tell you, I'm not quite sure how to put this, Michael, but you've stared into over 5,400 faces. You've done your part with an exceptional talent to make sure they're never forgotten. That's quite a burden that you're carrying in your rucksack there, Marine.
I'm going to go for my 5.5 mile walk when you and I are finished. I told my wife. Then tomorrow morning, because I'm doing this speech with the general, I'm going to be walking at the crack of dawn, because there's a Veterans Plaza in Edmonds where I have stones for my friends who died, and I'm going to go visit them tomorrow morning first thing and just tell them I'm not going to forget. I'm alive. I love you guys, men and women, and I'm dedicating my life to this, and I'm dedicating it free of charge. I'm not making a penny. This is just because I serve with these people and I understand this, and you know, it's easy to say you care. It's harder to act like you care, and I care.
Well, that's very, very clear, sir. And for what it's worth, I mean, this is just the opinion of, you know, some knucklehead doing a radio show out of Tucson, Arizona. But you've alluded to this. I mean, you're helping. Not only are you making sure these young men and women are never forgotten, but you're helping the families to heal. What you're doing is making a big importance. And I found one quote that I want to repeat to you, because it was told to you once before, and it's very important. Someone told you once that what you're doing here has allowed your very own soul to come home from Vietnam.
That was a Gold Star dad who said that, who Marine Gold Star dad, Vietnam vet, who lost his son. He said, Mike, your soul has gotten to come home from Vietnam. And I'm telling you, Ben, when he told me that, I realized that that was the piece that had been missing from my body for 40 years, and he was right. And I thank God every day for having it back.
Michael Reagan, thank you so much for everything you're doing to support our fallen members. Folks, I want to close with the words of another Reagan. I have no illusions about what little I can add now to the silent testimony of those who gave their lives willingly for their country. Words are even more feeble on this Memorial Day, for the sight before us is that of a strong and good nation that stands in silence and remembers those who are loved and who in return love their countrymen enough to die for them. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler Garcia.